Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
This interview is brought to you by Joe Azer. That's right. You need to buy or sell a home in the Northern Virginia area. Joe Azer is your man. He's got so many contacts. He's got what does he have? He's got the contractors, he's got the photographers, he's got the furniture, fucking staging, goddamn. I probably shouldn't be cursing this much during a live read, should I? Anyway, he's got it all. He's your one-stop shop. Let's be honest. Buying and selling a home is a big pain in the ass. He takes all of those concerns away. He does all the heavy lifting for you. Basically, just show up, sign the papers, and either stack a big pile of cash if you're selling your home or move into your gorgeous house. Short sales, you got bad credit, just pick out the neighborhood you want. Joe will work tirelessly to make it happen. 571-989-AZER is the phone number. 571-2937. Joe Azer is the only name you need to know if you're buying or selling a home in Northern Virginia. Go ahead and text him and ask him why Joe Jacoby is in the Hall of Fame yet.
If you want to become a Chad Duke Show Facebook subscriber, it's very, very easy. Head to the Chad Duke Show on Facebook, hit the Subscriber Hub button, and follow the steps to gain access to the secret supporter group chat and get the bonus show video backlogs.
Friendos, we're giving away a brand new copy of Channing Wilson's album Dead Man on vinyl, courtesy of Commonwealth Dry Goods. All you have to do to enter to win, tweet the gentleman, at Channing Wilson. Let him know you enjoyed the interview. Make sure you tag us in it as well, at Chad Duke, so we know that you're entered. We'll pick a nice one at random, and we'll ship you the album free of charge. It's an absolutely fantastic record, so this is a great prize. So again, first responders, we just came up with that. Tweet at Channing Wilson. Let him know you dug the interview, something you liked about it. Make sure you tag us to it at Chad Dukes. We'll pick someone at random, and you will win a brand new copy of his album, Dead Man, on vinyl. Everybody else can get one at ChanningWilson.com or slide by Commonwealth Dry Goods. We just may have a copy or two laying around.
Friendos, if you're in the area, make sure you visit Commonwealth Dry Goods in scenic Old Town Fairfax. They have the very best in local candles, peanuts, gifts, chocolates, olive oil, hot sauce, along with ice-cold cheer wine, and both types of music on vinyl. You can check them out on Instagram and Facebook at Commonwealth Dry Goods or order online today at CommonwealthDryGoods.com.
Duke's show, very excited right now. Joining us on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline is, well, one of my favorite artists recording music today. He has got an amazing album out, which we're actually going to give a copy away at the end of the interview. You can check it out and pick up a copy for yourself on vinyl at channingwilson.com. Mr. Channing Wilson joins us on the Chad Duke Show. Channing, great to finally catch up with you, brother. How are you?
Hey, Chad, doing good, man. I'm doing great. I'm down here in North Georgia in the mountains enjoying this beautiful day.
Well, that is where you hail from, my friend, and you can tell it is infused into your music, and that's something I always like to ask authentic musicians such as yourself is how much of, you know, kind of how you cut your teeth, how you cold your the fiber of who you are. How important is that when you're trying to write songs about something that, you know, convey a message to people? It seems like, you know, how you came up, for lack of a better cliche, is incredibly important if you're writing music like you do.
Man, I always say I sing like a talk, you know, and I think more people could be, it's easy to be authentic when you're literally just writing stories that you know, or things that you've done, and you're not coming, you know, you're not trying to talk anybody into this. You're just literally telling the story. You're like an old man sitting at a gas station telling the story, you know.
You don't have to fake anything. The record, exactly. Yeah, the record is called Dead Man, and you've been writing music and performing music a long time, and I actually read a track-by-track breakdown of, you know, what you were going for, what the songs are about, and it was incredibly insightful. But how long has this record been kind of bubbling up inside of you?
Man, some of these songs I wrote 12, 13 years ago, and I've been performing music for over 20 years in different. I had an old rockabilly honky tonk band way back in the day, and we traveled all around playing old school country and stuff. And then I moved to Nashville and started trying to stink that town up a little bit, you know. I really had a bad taste in my mouth about Nashville when I first started going there. But when I got there, I realized that, you know, there's a lot of people there really trying to do good things. It just doesn't get on the radio as much. And nowadays it seems to be opening up a little bit. But when I got there, it was really there was nowhere to go for a guy like me. But I just kept on writing songs. And these some of these songs are some of those early songs I wrote when I first got to Nashville.
Can you talk to me, because I read your bio on your website. It's very insightful. And they talked about, it seemed to me that you becoming a father kind of stoked a flame inside of you and instilled a sense of urgency. Like, I have to make this happen. And I've always said that. People ask me about being in radio. They're like, well, how did you find success in radio? I said, well, I didn't have a backup plan. Like, I had to, or I was going to be working at Home Depot the rest of my life. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I wanted to do. Did you know, knowing that you had become a father and taken that step, that next step, really kind of motivate you to, I have to go to Nashville and I have to manifest this life for myself?
Yeah, pretty much, man. I mean, you know, speaking of Home Depot, I was working at Lowe's and I came across a friend of mine turned me on to Billy Joe Shaver, and yeah, I went and seen him live, and quit my job a couple weeks later to start trying to figure out how to play music, you know, because that's what, you know, I loved singing. I loved playing my guitar, and but I couldn't get on board with you know, some of that late 90s country stuff, even though nowadays it's looked at like it's gold. But I like the old stuff, man. And when I heard Billy Joe Shaver, that really changed a lot of my life. But fast forward, you know, 7 or 8 years from that point, I had my son. And when that happened, man, I knew I had to start taking the business of it more serious. You know, I knew that I'd written some decent songs and I'd impressed some people along the way. But if I was really going to make a run at it and not be a sports bar dude on the stool playing 4-hour gigs the rest of my life, I would have to take it serious and move to where all the best songwriters in the world live. And
I'm glad to hear you say that about, you know, the homage you pay towards, you know, country's roots. Your voice sounds like it's from another time. And I mean, that is the highest praise I possibly can, because I do like the 90s stuff, but what I like the most is what you're talking about. And there's a song that Roger Allen Wade wrote called The First Time I Saw Waylon, where he talks about basically the exact same experience that you had, where it's like, I saw Billy Joe Shaver and I know this is what I'm going to do. I drop everything. And he talks about that when he saw Waylon Jennings. When you're recording these songs and writing the songs, how do you keep the influences of these titans that you're talking about? I know you're a big Guy Clark fan. how do you keep that? Do you keep it out of your music, or do you allow it to kind of weave itself into your thoughts and what you're writing as well? I always found that to be something that I imagine would be difficult, to not be over influenced by the guys you look up to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, I have no shame in that. Roger Allen Wade is actually one of my dear friends, and he's one of my big inspirations too. He's a Chattanooga boy, which is kind of where I'm from. And I had that same moment the first time I seen Roger play.
Wow.
And I was in a bar, and it was a it was the night that Dale Earnhardt died. So that was in 2001, and Roger was playing some kind of local thing, and I happened to be there, and it was the first time I ever seen him. When he started singing, I knew that I had to get better. You know,
yeah.
I was like, whoa, now there's the real deal. That guy's got a voice and a personality. And then I started going to watch him, and as a young man, I was wanting to be that type of figure in music. I mean, you emulate those things until you find your own style. And music is constantly ripping itself off. You know, Steve Earle's got a cool line about, you know, something on the lines, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's something on the lines of, you know, it's not ripping them off as long as you give them credit, you know? And so I've always done that too. But as far as the inspiration bleeding over into your songs, man, I wear it on my sleeves. It doesn't bother me at all. Everybody knows me, knows I'm a huge, Willie Nelson fan, Guy Clark, just those authentic songwriters, the people who really, when those cheesy cliche lines pop in their head, and they do, just because they're human, instead of putting them on paper, they put them aside and they dig a little bit deeper and they try to find a cooler way to say it, you know? Huh. And I learned from them. I learned from them listening to their music when I was learning how to write songs, and then sharing writing rooms with Guy Clark when I first got to Nashville, and getting to sit across from him and actually listen to him say something cheesy and then not write it down. Literally 20 minutes later, him turn that thing into something amazing. And when you get to see that, you realize the processes, you know, it's work. It's like it's like chainsaw carving, you know. It starts off as this big lump of wood, but by the end of it, you got a really amazing wooden Indian or something, you know?
Yeah, man, that Dublin blues is, I have songs I call funeral songs, which is like the one I want playing when I'm getting lowered in or whatever it is. And that's one of them. And that Forgive Me All My Anger, Forgive Me All, that whole just string right there. It just, you know, it's a song about being drunk and breaking up, but it's just the way that he phrases everything in that thing. It gets me chills just talking about it. So I know exactly what you're speaking to. And that must have been an unbelievable experience to be in the room to watch it happen.
Oh, well, it was, yeah, it sure was. And it was intimidating at first. And the coolest thing is he never made me feel like he was Guy Clark, you know. Mm. I knew he was, but he was just teaching, you know. That's really what he was. He was wanting to write good songs with people he was co-writing with, but he knew he had a unique perspective on words and thought and how to get them down, and melodies too, you know. He's a great melody guy and a great singer. I love the way he sings, you know, and he was really just teaching, you know, and I was lucky enough to be there to learn.
It's a cool story. It's at Channing Wilson on Twitter and Instagram, channingwilson.com. Pick up Dead Man on vinyl right there, and of course Spotify and iTunes, all that good stuff. But you support the artists by buying the hard copies, so let's do that. You mentioned Steve Earle. I'm such a huge fan, and he wrote a record called So You Want to Be an Outlaw, and it's a perfect country music record. And I make it a habit, Channing, to not tell geniuses what they should do with their time. So I would never tell Steve Earle, hey, you should make this type of music. But I almost feel like we got robbed of having like a legendary country music career if he would have kind of pivoted in that direction instead of, I mean, there's so many different influences. He does so many different things and is compelled to, you know, incorporate so many different kinds of music. But man, when that guy tackles country, he knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah. Well, he's just too smart for us, man. I mean, he's too well read to just play, you know, simple music, you know. And, You know, one of my favorite records by him is Train of Coming. It's more, yeah. It leans into the bluegrass world, but it's not really straight bluegrass. It's its own thing. And I based a lot of my, picking styles, because Norman Blake played on that record too. And I listened to that record over and over. And, but yeah, when, you know, he can do so much different stuff. I love his rock and roll stuff, man. I'm a huge fan, obviously. And, but you know, he's just too smart for, he has his own demons to fight and,
yeah.
And the things he needs to say before he's out of this world. So, yeah, we're not lucky enough for him to just to stick to country music, which is fine by me.
The comparisons that you draw, you know them, Stapleton, Jamie Johnson. I mean, I assume most people know that Jamie Johnson wrote Honky Tonk, Donk, Donk, but these are guys, yeah, that were writing hit songs, and then they decided, you know, I need this to come from me, and you're right there in the pocket. And I'm just curious, what these are your contemporaries. I mean, these are artists that I enjoy, but these are basically coworkers for you. When people make those comparisons, is it flattering? Is it, hey, I want to be my own man? Like, how do you digest it when people say those things about you?
Yeah, you know, used to, when I first got to town, I got compared to Jamie right off the bat, and I took it, you know, not necessarily bad, but I just took it, you know, I didn't want to be compared to anybody. Sure. I definitely felt unique in my own way. But, you know, people do that. They feel the need to go, oh, man, you look just like my friend from back home. Hey, you look just like my cousin, man. You remind me of my brother. And so in the music world, people do the same thing, you know, like you sound just like so-and-so. And they're trying to pay you a compliment, you know. And so I had to learn that, that's what it was. It wasn't that, even though I did have a music executive tell me that, that I wouldn't work because of the whole Stapleton thing, you know? And I was like, you're telling me because I remind you of one of the best singer songwriters in the world that I'm not going to be successful. I'm like, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. You know? And then what do you know? Like, here comes, you know, five or six acts getting signed by major labels that are trying to sound just like him, even though they're not him. That's the thing about Nashville I don't like, is they're chasing music instead of making music most of the time.
And that's a tattoo right there.
Yeah.
Working with Dave Cobb, I mean, you look at the records this guy's put out, and it's just, I don't know. It's for a fan, it's almost like a fictional character at this point. I was just curious. I don't know how your experience was. The record's unbelievable, so I assume it was prosperous. But other than just talent and the ability to assemble a song, is there any way? I always compare him to Phil Jackson, where it's like, you know, everyone has superstars, but you have to be able to work with superstars. Is there anything that you could talk about with that experience, that how he is so adept at drawing the best out of the artists that he seems to work with?
Well, I think the comparison to Phil Jackson's right, except you'd have to throw, you know, a Scottie Pippen in there too, because he's also a player. Hmm. And he's also the musician too. He's not just the director or the coach, you know, or the producer. He's in there helping you find the, you know, tweaking certain melodies to the songs. I mean, literally assisting you into making your songs better. He's just he's a student of music, and you know, and he wears it on his sleeves. I mean, he comes in there and he's quick to tell you he doesn't like something, and you know, you got to be able to take that and move on and not let it rock you. And I mean, that's what I signed up for, you know. Yeah. When I first heard, Brent Cobb is one of my good friends, and Brent, yeah, man, and Brent played me some records that he was producing out in L.A. I think an artist named Lucette, she's a Canadian artist, he played me that record. It just blew me away, and then other stuff that he was doing, and it's just the tone, the sound, you know, and I was like, man, like, that's what I came to Nashville for, except the guy lived in L.A. at the time. And so when he got to Nashville, I pretty much just kept pushing until I got to know him and got to work with him.
That's great. It's very cool, and it's nice to see, you know, when you see an artist start working with them, it's like, oh, they're going to be elevated after this. So I'm glad that you had that experience, and the record speaks for itself. Let's talk a little bit about Dead Man before. I don't want to keep you all day, but it's one of those albums, man, where I have a different, like, my favorite track. I get into one song. It's happened several times. It started with Blues Coming On. I'm running down a song currently is in heavy rotation for me. But Drink That Strong, I think this is such an insightful commentary on not only, you know, whatever it is, substance abuse or what have you, but just I think you have to age and get older and realize, I keep getting messed up and I'm not feeling any better. So why do I keep getting messed up? Like, am I going to feel bad either way? Then why don't I just try to live a better life? And I had an epiphany like that a while back. Started exercising again, trying to be a little bit of a better, less of a piece of shit, basically, not another way to put it. And that song, you just don't hear any songs, especially in country music, speak to that. So I just think you found something. Not only is it a great track that I love, but it also, it's a completely unique message, or at least one that you certainly don't hear a lot.
And I really do appreciate you having that perspective on it, because that is definitely what I was going after. It doesn't get said to me a lot, just because, you know, it's one of those songs. I always say it's a song about quitting drinking that makes me want to have a whiskey, you know.
That's exactly right.
But the truth of it is that, like, you know, it's like, how many bottles do I have to, you know, how many times do I have to get to the end of these bottles to realize the answer's not in them, you know? I might as well, if I'm just going to waste my time getting screwed up, I might as well be wasting my time doing something more productive. I might as well go fishing, you know? And so that's kind of the thought behind it is, I co-wrote that song with a friend of mine, Houston Phillips, and he had the title. And when he said the title, I kind of knew what I wanted the song to be about. And I was, had a really, you know, old school Hank Jr. vibe in mind that day, you know, and it just, I thought, man, how many drinking songs are out there, you know, just about glorifying, you know, getting drunk all the damn time. And what about the guy that's sitting at home that can't put it down but wants to, you know, where's his song? And I kind of thought about him too, because I've been that guy too before. And I know him. I know plenty of dudes like that too.
Yeah, but the way that your inflection, I don't know if that's the right term, but you're not preachy in the song. You know what I mean? Like, you're not coming from a teetotaler type of perspective, dry drunk type of perspective. It's like, this is the way it is, and here is a logical response. Like, you're going to feel bad either way, so why do the thing that's going to tear yourself apart at the same time? And I love the fact that it's not holier than some of these, you know, I used to drink and now I don't songs. They almost come across as preachy. And that's not what that song is. It's relatable. And I think that's probably the difference.
Yeah, well, I think the reason is because I never used to listen to preachers, you know, and I don't want to be preached at, sure. You know, and I learned from other people's mistakes and from my own. And one thing that I know is nobody likes being told what to do. I don't care who you are. So why would someone want to pay whatever amount of money it is to listen to me try to tell them what to do, you know?
Sure.
And all I can do is say, this is what I should do. And then hopefully people relate to that. I always tell my artist friends that too. I was like, you know, sometimes you're thinking too much about what the fans want to hear. And, you know, they're paying to see you. They want to relate to you, not necessarily hear a song that's exactly like their life sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And Johnny Cash and Folsom Prison Blues is a great example. You know, nobody can he couldn't relate to that song, really. He wasn't in prison, but he delivered it in a way to where and so many people listened to that song that never was in prison, but they could understand it because they just, you know, people's brains are really descriptive and they can come up with their own versions of what these people look like, these characters in your songs, and you should let them build their own characters instead of telling them exactly what this person looks like or exactly how they talk or feel, you know. The more they develop their own character, the more invested they're going to be in your song you're singing for them, at least. That's about the only way I can put that.
It's exactly correct. I've kept you too long. Let me ask you one more, and then
I'll let you go,
brother. I really appreciate it. Channing,
I love talking, man.
Oh, good. Me too. Two peas in a pod. ChanningWilson.com is the website. Pick up the record today, and of course, at Channing Wilson on Twitter and IG. How is someone, you're a country music fan, I'm a country music fan, I get asked this question all the time, is they say, the sad songs, you know, sad songs and waltzes aren't selling. Why do you enjoy that? And sometimes it's difficult for me to put into words why the pain in a sad country music song is still enjoyable. Like, it doesn't necessarily, I don't get all bummed out and have to, you know, go outside and sit in the sun for a while. Is someone that, you know, lives and breathes this stuff, what is the best way to answer that question to a novice?
Well, I mean, sad songs are always going to sell because, I mean, people are sad, you know. Any given time, people are having a rough go at it, you know. And I always say, you know, you think about this, like when, you know, how many people go to bars to be around other people like them, you know, or how many times did, like, if you were, say, you know, you had some, I used to equate it to like some drug buddies back in the day when you used to hang out and get high with them all the time. But the minute that you stop doing it, the minute they stop calling, you know,
yeah.
And it's like, you're not like them anymore. You know, they want to hang out with people that are like them. It just, you know, and so given the perspectives, you know, like a lot of life is sad, you know, and it's okay to talk about it. And it makes you feel better knowing that somebody out there feels the same way you do. You know, it's like that helps you get through, the struggles of the realization that how sad things are sometimes. And at the same time, they're equally just as happy and they're just as rowdy and they're just as fun and sexy and all these things that that we feel on a daily basis. But we shouldn't ignore sadness just because we don't want to talk about it, you know. And that's the thing that country music to me always was the outlook for, that, you know, whereas pop music never was that. Rock music, you couldn't really even understand some of the stuff, you know, because it was just, you were just rocking to it. But country music's where you went, man, when your heart got broke, you know, when she cheated on you or something like that, or he cheated on you, you know, you put down that you put down that New Kids on the Block record and you put on a Merle Haggard record or something like that, and you found ways to get through it. You know, people tell me all the time, they're like, man, that song right there got me through this, that song got me through that. And you never hear that on the, you know, on the up-tempo kind of just fun time songs. You never hear, oh man, that song got me through a field party, or that song got me through a night at the club one time, you know. It's always, man, that song got me through a heartbreak, or when I came back from Afghanistan, that song saved my life. Yeah, I've heard stuff like that, you know, and it's the sad songs that do it every time. And it's, you know, and if nobody else is writing them, you know, somebody got it.
I have a litmus test for friends where I play The Grand Tour by George Jones, and if they get it, it's like, all right, we're going to be okay. And
that's a great one.
Yeah, if I have to explain it to them, it's like, maybe we just better keep it moving. One last hack question, just because I'm gonna go. I've never been to Floors, and I'm gonna go check that place out and look and back. What is your favorite place to play country music venue in the contiguous United States? Is there one that jumps out in your mind at you?
Man, I have favorite ones for different reasons. It's kind of like asking me my favorite song. Sure. You know, when you said Luckenbach, it just made it made me go there because one of my dear friends is Django Walker, who is Jerry Jeff Walker's son. And he invited me out to the Jerry Jeff
statue
unveiling. And it was a who's who, man, of like really good Texas and Americana singer-songwriters. And I was really fortunate to be able to get up and I performed. I did Guy Clark's Desperado's Waiting on Train.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
With Django and William Beckman and Jamie Lynn Wilson. It was really, really cool, man.
Is there a copy of that? Like, can you hear that somewhere?
I think there's a video somebody took on Facebook. I don't know, man.
Okay.
But, you know, like Steve Earle was there, all kinds of people. But that was my first time at Luckenbach. And what a place, man. That place just has a vibe, and I can see why so many artists and just creative folks flock there. I'm that way with Key West in a way, man. I love Key West. I'm a boy from the mountains, but Key West just has a lawlessness about it that just attracts me, you know? I have different venues, for different places, but, there's listening rooms. One of my favorites is Eddie's Attic in Atlanta for just playing songs and people listening to them. It's just an amazing place to just sit and try material out and be vulnerable and see what people think about it, you know.
It's funny you said Key West. My friend, if you've got to check him out, his name is the Reverend Peyton. Reverend Peyton's big damn band, and he's one of the unbelievable slide guitarists. I can't even explain to you what the guy can do. But
I think I've seen him on YouTube.
Have you? Yeah, he's got a lot of...
Is he kind of a big guy?
Big guy, and he had a guitar that was also a shotgun that went viral during COVID, the millions of views. So, but he speaks about Key West. Him and his wife are the main players in the band, and they go down for a whole month and play shows in Key West because of the energy and kind of what you're talking about. So maybe that's something that a lot of musicians experience while they're down there.
Yeah, it's just, it's healing. It's like I said, it's that vibe where you feel like you don't have to do a certain thing. People just let you be you, and it's like that in Luckenbach. It's like that in listening rooms and places like that, and then there's people show up and they pay their $20 for a ticket and they just want to, they want to go somewhere for a couple hours and those kind of places where you got the band and just having a good time. Billy Bob's is a great example. I love that place. I'm sure some of those Texas artists get tired of playing there, but man, I would love to have a Billy Bob's 50 miles from my house. Man, I'd be there every weekend.
That is exactly the way I feel about those Texas venues. Man. I'm like,
or Grin Hall or any of those places, man. I love it out in Texas. I ain't going to lie. I really do. If I was going to move anywhere else, it would be Key West or Texas for sure.
Are you cool with Blackberry Smoke?
Oh, I love them, man. Oh, yeah.
Good. Yeah. They're fantastic. And a tour with you guys would be just unbelievable.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of shows with them. And me and Charlie's tried to write a couple songs before. We got a couple to work on. But I'm huge fans of those guys.
How do we happen? Let's make that happen ASAP.
I'm trying. I am trying.
I interviewed Charlie about
competition out there these days, Chad.
Yeah, there certainly is. Those guys are at the top of their game too. I interviewed him about 15 years ago, and when the Freedom song came out, and he said, we were talking about American Idol or something, and he said, "Well, you like to tell me that you love Hank Jr., but here's a guitar, play one of his songs." And that always kind of stuck with me, his analysis of that.
Yeah. Well, they're and not to mention, man, when you do this so much and you travel so much and you see people on the road, they're just one of the most genuinely nice groups of individuals to come across, man. Every time you see them, they love on you and they thank you for being there and they give you props from the stage. And you know what I mean? They're just good old boys, man. And you can't have too many of them running around nowadays for sure.
It's really well said. It's been great talking to you, man. I know you got you have some plans to come through here in the near future when that gets all settled. Love to have you back on and get some listeners out to the shows. But the main way to support, I assume, is for people to buy the vinyl right now, I would assume.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't think the show's been announced yet, but I'm coming up through like Virginia Beach in June. So I'll let you know. I'll text you and let you know when they're going to be. And yeah, man, I mean, the best way to support me right now is that, I got a lot of shows coming up in June. I've been down on I don't know if you knew this or not, but I had a foot surgery where I'd broken my foot. And so I had to cancel all these shows in May that I was supposed to be playing. So that's why you can hear the birds chirping right now. It's because I'm down here in Georgia just with my foot up, trying to heal up.
Well, you did what all dudes do, is you try to tough it out through some sort of injury or illness, and then it gets worse.
Oh, yes, sir.
That's what we all do.
Yeah, sure do.
Well, I'm glad you're recovering from that. I can't wait to see you out on the road. It is channingwilson.com. Pick up the record and, of course, Instagram, iTunes, Spotify, all the places. Just search Channing Wilson. Sir, I'm a humongous fan. By the way, tremendous interview. You should do a podcast or write a book or something, too. You have a way with the words outside of just writing songs. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Chad.
The great Channing Wilson, everybody, on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline. It is the Chad Duke Show.
The Virginia Pizza Crusade is on a mission to find the best slices in the Commonwealth. To keep up with the reviews, be sure to follow the Virginia Pizza Crusade on Instagram, at Virginia Pizza Crusade.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.